Hey, it's Brent Porsche for 93.3 WMMR in Philadelphia, currently backstage at the 2019 KnotFest Roadshow here in Camden, New Jersey. And joining me now is an extremely talented songwriter and guitarist, born in Las Vegas but grew up in the north side of Des Moines, Iowa, where he had his hand in selling upwards of 35 million records worldwide with both Slipknot and Stone Sour, including his latest effort, Slipknot's We Are Not Your Kind, which debuted at number one on charts all over the world. You know him as number four, The Peach, Mr. Biggs, and of course, The Jester. We welcome back to WMMR, Mr. James Root. Hello,
well,
sir.
Well, how's it going?
Doing well, thanks,
well,
man.
Well, that was quite an intro. I learned
okay?
Some shit about myself. Stuff.
Well, I appreciate you taking some time to talk with us at MMR,
yeah,
man.
No
thanks
problem,
so much.
Man.
First things first, though. We spoke before. I would never, ever expect you to remember because I know that you talk to the main people all the time. But look at these studs.
Oh, yeah.
And see if you know from how long ago that was.
That had to have been a Stone Sour tour.
Yep. It was the Jägermeister music tour 2007, something like that,
wow.
Somewhere around there. So
yeah.
Quite a while.
Crazy.
But those are two sexy dudes right there. I mean, your beard is pretty much non-existent there.
I grew a chin. and now the girl gets to see me and all my awkwardness.
So first things first, yeah, we had a chance to talk over a decade ago. We have obviously changed since then. I had the short spiky hair and barely a beard, and now you know we're both hairy, manly men.
Yeah.
You guys actually filmed Made of Scars, the music video there.
Yes.
Because you did the song twice.
At the Fillmore.
At the
right?
Electric Factory.
The Electric Factory,
yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. I'm actually in the video. I'm like sort of in the middle where the guy's
nice.
Bouncing
yeah,
out
I remember
the Philly
that.
Hat on.
I think I was wearing that same hoodie in that video.
Nice. So here we are. It's 2019. Slipknot's kicked off their latest touring cycle for their brand new sixth studio album, We Are Not Your Kind. How's the tour been so far?
Man, it's been great. Like, we did Europe for like 6 weeks first, and that was... that was a little bit hairy. You know, it was like kind of thrown to the wolves. Like, we just essentially finished the record. We didn't even start mixing it yet, and we were already on the road. And for me, you know, I'm not juggling two bands, so I hadn't been on tour for probably 3 years.
Sure.
So it was kind of like, oh, how do I do this now? You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, in the one interview I was watching with you talking about the jet lag just from Japan alone, I was wondering, you know, what it's like after Europe, not doing it for that
Europe
long.
Europe isn't so bad. Like, Europe's not that bad. Like, if you fly, like, you know, if you fly from New York to London or whatever, it's only 6 hours. It's like flying across the States or whatever.
Sure.
So that's no big deal. It's just, you know, it's just I hadn't been in that. It's hard for me to switch gears from touring to being home. And
sure.
When we did 6 weeks in Europe, we came home and we only had 6 or 7 days off before we started this. So it's like not even enough time. It's like I don't even know why I unpacked my suitcase.
Well, you said that 2 weeks is usually the threshold as you feel comfortable being home before you start going back.
Yeah, 2 or 3 weeks is when you start feeling like, okay, I'm at home now, and then boom, you get ripped out of that environment and thrown back out into this madness.
Right. Is it true back in the day you were asked to be in Slipknot a couple times and said no?
Yeah, so it was weird because like I had given up playing guitar when I was like 24 or something like that. I was like, I'm 24, I'm going to be 25. I haven't made it yet. I don't even have a band. The thrash metal, like speed metal band I was in, had split up. And I just kind of was like really down on myself about it. I didn't even own a guitar. I had to borrow a guitar from my buddy Zach Dieter. And a couple of friends of mine asked me to join like a... We had this like side project. Or not a side, it was a band. It was like kind of like this funk rock kind of weird thing called the Beat Truck Fatals. And that kind of got me back into playing guitar after being out of it for a couple of years and back into the music scene. And at that time, Anders had called me about replacing Donnie Steele. And I said no at that time because I hadn't been playing guitar and I knew that, you know, those guys were players. And my chops were bad. I hadn't even touched a guitar in a year or so.
Sure.
And I was just kind of like, nah, I'm just going to be a... You know, the regular dildos, you know what I mean, and work and do all that. And so I said no, but I got back into music. I played with the Beat Truck Fatals, and then shortly after that, I joined Stone Sour.
Sure.
And then after Corey joined Stone Sour, Slipknot had gotten a record deal at that point. And, you know, and I told the band at that time I was in a different band with my drummer from the thrash metal band, Danny Spain. We were in a band called Dead Front. And I told those dudes, I was living with the singer, renting the basement out from him and his wife. I was like, you know, if Slipknot ever called me, I won't join. I don't want to feel like it's handed to me. I feel like I got to feel like I worked for it, like I did something, like I
sure.
achieved it, you know. And And sure enough, they did, and I never thought they would. So I said no again, and I, you know, and then finally it got to a point where I just realized, you know, my buddy Zach that I borrowed the guitar from was like, "What are you, stupid?" It's like very few times in life do you get a chance to like take a great step forward, even if it fails, even if you fall flat on your face, you can always come back to doing what you're doing now, you know. And I was like, so I called Clown Collect from the club we were playing at, and ended up being
the rest is history. So what was your first ever tour? Was it Ozfest 99? Was that the first like ever real tour?
First real tour, yeah. I mean, we did like a 5-state tour in the band Atomic Opera that I was in, not the one from Texas that got signed, but the one that I was in Des Moines. We did like a 5-state tour in a van with a trailer, a club tour, whatever, but that was nothing. Like 99 was like, here you go, this is a real deal. Here's a tour bus. Here's per diems, you know, and that's all we were making. We weren't making any money on Ozfest. I mean, you know, it's your $20 a day. Figure it out.
Do you have a vivid memory from that particular tour that still resonates with you?
You know what? I remember like just being like, "Wow, this is crazy. This is like you know, the first show was in West Palm Beach, Florida, and I remember showing up in the bus. The bus picked us up in Iowa, and we drove down there. And I remember like sitting in the parking lot and seeing another tour bus roll up. And I remember it was Shavo from System of a Down
right. Yep.
Standing in like the, you know, the tour bus opens up and you have steps that walk up into it. And he was standing like in the stairwell on the other side of the door. And there was another band that he must have known because he was like, he knew he was going to meet them there. So he was like at the door waiting to get off the bus. And I was just like, I was like, holy shit, that's Shavo. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it was crazy. It was just, you know, things like that. And BC from Head PE kind of took us under his wing and fed us Jack Daniels quite regularly, and
I'm sure that was the alcohol of choice on that tour,
yeah,
amongst everything else.
It was flowing.
But I mean, you're a huge Sabbath fan, so that had to be super cool for you.
It
to
was amazing.
Be on
I
the
remember,
tour.
I remember taking, you know, I grew up, you know, suburban, you know, whatever, Iowa. We would, you know, we'd smoke a little weed, we'd drive around town. That's all there was to do, you know, kind of a small farm town.
We do that here still.
We would listen to Sabbath all the time, you know, like. That's what we did. So when we were on Ozfest, my buddy came out to Kansas City, and we actually sat like in the pit and watched them play the songs that we would drive around and listen to. And I was just looking at my buddy, and he was looking at me, and we were just like tripping out. Like it was surreal.
Yeah,
absolutely surreal. I mean, seeing Tony Iommi and Geezer and the whole thing. You know, it was just. Mind-blowing.
What's mind-blowing for me is that Slipknot was on the second stage, to even like fathom that. I mean, Static X also on the second stage,
man.
But you know,
just that was a weird tour too. And bands like Puya and
Fear Factory was on
Fear
there.
Fear Factory, Head PE, you know, System of a Down, crazy. Drain STA.
Do you remember your first ever Slipknot performance?
Yes. So I joined the band, it was a Saturday night when I called Clown Collect. I went to his house Sunday and listened to all the stuff that they'd been working on in Malibu. And then that Monday I went into work early and I quit my job. And I told them, you know, a week later I'm going to be in Malibu recording with these guys. They had to re-record Spit It Out. And then they wanted to record two more songs. One was Interloper that ended up being Diluted. And then the song Me Inside. So I had three songs to record with them, and I had to rehearse with these guys. So, you know, I'm like, I don't have time to, you know, come to work anymore. I got a week to, like, bone up on this music and learn this stuff, and then I'm in Malibu recording. And our first show, before we knew we were going to do Ozfest, they had booked it. We didn't have a manager. We didn't have anything. I think Clown booked the show. It was at the First Avenue in Minneapolis.
Okay.
And at the time, I didn't have my Jester's mask yet. I was so new to the band. I was just like, you know, I think I was wearing this other guy's coveralls that was like a band helper guy that was a big dude like me. So yeah. His name was Aaron. So it had like an A on the arm, you know.
Right, right.
And I wore Josh's bondage hood, the guy I replaced in the band, which was like two sizes too small for my head. So it was like filling up with sweat as we were playing.
Right.
It was awful. And then I came off the stage. I ripped that thing off my head, and all the sweat poured out of it. And I looked at Clown, and I was like, I'm making my own mask. And he's like, I'll help you. So that's how the Jester mask kind of came about.
Well, when we spoke last, one of the last questions I asked you was, like, what it's like to be up on stage with the mask. And you said to me, and I believe you said for the first time ever I'm saying this, I hate wearing that fucking mask up on stage.
Yeah.
But this at the time, again, 2006, 2007, you still had the enclosed mouth and all that kind of stuff, too.
It was a bummer. And with the original one with the leather straps was, you know, it digs into your skull and it, you know, it pulls your hair and it, everything else. And it just, you know, it sticks to your face if you're not sweating and all that. And,
right.
You know, we were doing in-stores sometimes. A lot of the in-stores we did in the early days, you know, 2000, when we first went to Europe and Australia and all that, there'd be 5,000-6,000 people at these in-stores, and we'd sign everything.
For hours.
We were there for 6, 7, 8 hours at a time, pissing in bottles underneath the tables while we're signing. And, I mean, it was nuts. You know, it was bananas. It was like a miniature version of Beatlemania or something, you know.
Well, this particular mask and this particular getup is definitely my favorite, and I think it's the coolest in the band, because I think the jester mask with the open mouth with the beard flowing down, man, is badass looking.
I did that because we did a we did like a Golden God Awards, and we got to hand an award to Lemmy, and I didn't have a mask. I was in Stone Sour at the time, and we were playing that event. So they grabbed one of my masks from the Grammy Museum next door to the place. This is out in L.A.
Right.
And I had started growing my beard out, and it was pretty long. And I put that mask on, and it was just like pushing it into my neck. And then I saw pictures of it, and it's like, man, I got to figure that out. So I started cutting the bottom of it out.
You're a big-time Beatles fan, right?
Love them.
Have you ever met – I know George Harrison is an influence of yours. Have you ever met him got to see him perform or anything?
Never
like
got
that?
A chance to meet. I don't know if guys like that would ever be – you know, interested in meeting a guy like me, but I did go, so I broke my wrist years ago, and I was at home, and we had a mutual, our stage manager worked for Paul McCartney, so I sat a tour out because I had a broken wrist, and I got to go see Paul McCartney at Wells Fargo Arena in Des Moines, and I met the entire band. I didn't get to meet Paul, but I got to watch them. They did like a two-hour sound check.
Oh, wow.
And I got to watch that whole sound check, and actually Diane from their camp just reached out to me because, Paul McCartney's drummer, their drum tech, wants to bring his son to a show. So
nice.
You know, she's like, when are you going to come see Paul? And da-da-da-da-da. So I'm hoping I get a chance to meet Sir Paul McCartney. That would be a dream come true. I did get to meet Roger Daltrey and Pete Townsend a couple months ago, and that was pretty mind-blowing. So.
Well, that was another question, because Pete Townsend, I know, is a biggie for you as well.
He's, man, I tell you what, so Lou Brutus introduced us. I went to a town hall that they did in down in Florida, and it was cool, man. I just sat there and listened to the stories and listened to them talk each other up, and it was really, like, just mind. I mean, living legends in front of you. Pete Townsend sort of invented the way a lot of rock players and metal players play. I mean, he was the first dude that was jumping 3 feet in the air, smashing his guitar, doing all this crazy stuff.
And he's still wild to this day doing his thing up there.
But when Lou introduced us, like, Roger and Pete both, I could see them kind of like light up. Those two dudes are like really like involved with like new music and younger artists and getting artists, you know, like out there, and it was kind of a cool thing. And I got to actually say to Pete, you know, you're the reason I play a telly, you know, seeing you, you know, old videos on MTV with you like rocking a telly, that's like had a huge impact on me as a kid. And that's, you know,
what was his reaction?
He just lit up, man. And he was like gracious, and he was like, and I was like, hey, we're gonna be playing Download, and he's like, I want to come, you know what I mean, and all
get
that
out.
So I mean, he didn't end up coming. They're busy.
Can you imagine seeing him side stage on your side over
Dude,
there
that would be playing. So killer. I was like, you know, and then Lou told me he's getting ready to write like a record, and I'm like, let me help, like, I want to collaborate with Pete Townsend, and you know, that would be
cool,
so
man.
Killer.
So David Gilmour, another one, have you ever met him or got to see him play?
I would probably need new underwear if I met Dave Gilmour. I mean, he's like, I mean, just legendary guitar player. There's so much emotion in his guitar playing, and when I listen to, I mean, you know, all these bands like this, I grew up listening to it with my parents and stuff like that, and it's like I'm even starting to get emotional about it now a little bit, but that music is so formative for me, and it means so much to me. I don't
and
know
takes
if
you back.
To, yeah, I don't know if I'd be able to contain myself. You know?
Yeah, I saw David Gilmour at Madison Square Garden a few years ago, and that was like, you know, you have a bucket list of people that you need to see, especially before they go. He was up at the top, and he was just, I mean, absolutely amazing.
I would absolutely like probably give a digit to see that happen.
Yeah. What was your first ever concert?
Man, my parents took me to so many concerts when I was a kid, and I mean, I saw everybody from Aerosmith and ZZ Top, Ted Nugent, all these guys. I can't remember what the first one was, but I mean, you know, we used to have this thing called the Iowa Jam, and I remember being very, very young and them trying to like sneak in under the fences and stuff. Like, it's actually where we played the Iowa State Fair at, and I saw Metallica there on the Master of Puppets tour. I stood right in front of Cliff Burton.
Yes,
yeah, it was
yeah,
amazing.
Man.
But I mean, I can't remember the absolute first one, but I do remember an interesting one. They took me to see Loverboy, and opening up was Donny Iris.
Oh, get out,
so,
really?
Yeah, and that was actually a really cool show. There was, although there was some really high chick behind me, and I had a broken arm at that time. I break my arm a lot.
It sounds like it, yeah.
There was like some high chick behind me that was like trying to grab this like glow stick, and she kept grabbing the sling, and I remember my dad like reaching around and grabbing her, and like, hey, leave her alone. And her boyfriend's like, it's cool, man, it's cool. And then they're like passing the J around, and I'm just like, wow, my parents are weird.
Well, was your parents were the ones that would sneak you into the concerts with the bottle of booze and all that kind of stuff?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you know, drive-in theaters, they'd put everybody in the trunk, and you know, that whole thing,
right? It was another Metallica album, Ride the Lightning, that sort of changed your musical path. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, because so, you know, I was listening to, you know, like Motley Crue and Twisted Sister and Rat and stuff like that, you know, like guitar-oriented music at that time. Like, I think I was 13, 14 years old or whatever. And then after school, I remember going over to this guy, Jason Marocchi, another guitar player up in Ankeny where I grew up. And he was like, you need to check this out. He's like, this drummer needs an oxygen mask. And he played Fight Fire with with Fire. And I was like, what is this? This is like next level. Like, I've never heard a drummer play like that. I've never heard nothing like that, you know?
Sure.
And from there on, it was like, you know, I mean, I appreciate, you know, Rat and all those bands for what they are, but this was like heavily guitar oriented, heavily drum oriented. And this was like, this is, you know, and at that time your mind's a sponge and you just want to like be as extreme as you can with a guitar, you know? And it's like, I need to learn how to pick that fast.
Yeah.
I need to learn downstrokes, and you know what I mean? And that, you know, that really kind of helped form me as a guitar player, is that, you know, Killing Is My Business, Business Is Good, all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, because it opened, once you found that record, back in those days, it wasn't like streaming. It wasn't like word of mouth through social media. It was you go to a record store and you look for a cover that you thought was cool, and
yeah,
you hope the band's cool when you listen to it, you know, and then you study the artwork and the, you know, you read the lyrics and all that. And so after Ride the Lightning, it was like all bets are off. You know, I was looking for bands like Onslaught and Overkill and Anthrax and Megadeth and, you know, you name it.
Right. So Slipknot celebrating their 25th anniversary of the formation in 2020. Has there been any kind of foreshadowing as to what you'd like to see happen next year, or any plans in the works?
Bionic limbs? Is that a thing? Can we do that?
Yeah.
I don't know, man. We're talking like clowns talking about, I mean, I don't know if we're going to do like a record, like play it. We did that with Iowa at Knot Fest, and it was cool. It was a cool thing, but it might be cool to do, you know, we have been talking about maybe trying to find some way to play this album in its entirety, front, top to bottom, you know.
It's
so
killer. And it needs to be, I think.
I would like to do that. I would like that. I think that would be something really cool. And do it in a, like, really, like, toned down, like, stripped down, not big stage set, club atmosphere type of thing.
That'd
you
be
know?
Killer.
I'd love to do something like that. And then maybe, like, webcast it or something.
Yeah.
You know?
All right, cool. Well, let's switch gears. Talk about the new record, We Are Not Your Kind, out now via the mighty Roadrunner Records. You were quoted as saying that one of your inspirations this time around was those artists that recorded full-length albums, not just songs, because they kind of tell a story in the sort of the path of the track listing, and that's what you ended up doing this time around.
Yeah, the evolution of rock and roll is so, I mean, it's so young, but it's been around for so long. But, I mean, you know, relatively speaking, you know, I mean, everything was singles based back in the day, you know. I mean, you had songwriters giving songs to people like Elvis or whoever, and then they'd put out these songs, and that was that. Well, it's kind of reverting back to that a little bit with all this streaming. You know, you have all these pop acts now that just do a song, and maybe the attention deficit disorder that we have as a society, maybe the record album is probably going to go the way of the dinosaur. I don't know, although they did just find a fully intact dinosaur somewhere in a glacier. But anyways, you know, I think, you know, my buddy, another one of my buddies back at home, he's really into this new record. He's like, it's a headphone record. And, you know, that brought me back to me being a kid, you know, like lighting incense and having black light posters and putting
on hands and, you know,
yeah, you know, putting on Dark Side of the Moon with headphones on so you get the full stereo experience. And he said that this is what this record does for him. And, you know, I got to attribute that to Clown, because Clown, you know, he's very into, like, numerology, and things happen for a reason, and there's a reason. So there's, you know, there's a reason why Insert Coin is track one and Sainted track two and so forth. You know, everything fits together with all the segues and musical interludes, because that's how he had this vision in his mind. And whether it's something in Corey's lyrics or a note that the song may end on or something that a segue leads into or out of, there's, you know, and I couldn't tell you what that all is, because I'd leave that that's his world, right? You know, like, you take that art and you do what you need to do.
Well, plus you'd pull your hat off because you'd just, you know, never be finished. You'd try to be a perfectionist.
I can't do set lists. Right. I can't do track listings for records. I just, you know, let me write some riffs and put some arrangements together and work in the studio, and I'm happy.
I mean, it sounds like you guys came into this album flush with ideas. There's 15 quote songs left over. 7 or 8 of them are pretty much full songs with vocals and all that kind of stuff too. I presume that's a good sign that you guys came in and you had all this stuff ready to go. And
yeah, we had a lot of time to work on it. I mean, we had like, this is the longest amount of time we had to actually work on the demos, and it was really, that made it really hard to like pick what was going to go on the record. You know, but on the flip side of that coin, it's kind of a double-edged sword. We had like half the amount of time to actually track the record. So, you know, we were scrambling to get it done in 3 months so that we could hit the road in Europe, like we were talking about earlier in the interview. So, you know, it was good that we were prepared, and I, you know, hopefully we'll get that amount of time to work on the next one. Cause even though we have a surplus of songs and some of those may end up on the next record, I'd like to, you know, once I start writing and once I put my head in that mode, it's like, my head's down, I'm at my computer, and it's like 12, 14 hours a day of just writing riffs and layering them and
getting
them to a point where the band can hear them and not have to imagine what a song is going to sound like. It's pretty much there.
Speaking of surplus of songs, we've been hearing about Look Outside Your Window, which is not really a quote Slipknot album, obviously, because there's only 4 of you that are working on it. It sounds like that's going to be seeing the light of day, maybe down the line a little bit here.
It is, yeah, and I talked to Clown about it, because actually the song on We Are Not Your Kind, My Pain, was written at that time in that house that we wrote all the rest of that music for. So I hadn't heard anything about what we were going to do with it for a while, and I just assumed, well, shit, My Pain's going to be on the record. Maybe all this other stuff might eventually filter its way into future records that we do. And Clown's like, no, I want to release it. We need to wait, because it's about Slipknot right now, and it's about We Are Not Your Kind. We don't want to take anything away from that, you know. And, you know, it's definitely important music. It shows a different side of what we do, although this record that we just put out kind of touches on that sort of side of what we do a little bit too, that more cerebral kind of stuff.
Sure. You know? We're hearing Radiohead-esque. I mean, that's not something that necessarily turns me on, but is that like the direction?
That's a great compliment, because I found the whole Britpop thing kind of late in the game. When we were doing all these in-stores that we were talking about, they'd let us pick through CDs. So after I got done picking enough CDs that I had like sort of filled my record collection of what I would listen to with my parents, I started looking for different music that wasn't metal. Just because, you know, you get burnt out on it, for at least I was, you know, when you're on tour constantly and it's metal all the time and metal festivals. And, you know, I just, don't get me wrong, it's near and dear and close to my heart, and it's, you know, it's been good to me my entire life. But sometimes I have different emotions and I want to, you know, feel that too. But I found OK Computer, and that record blew my mind. So I went back and I got the Bends, and then that opened up my mind to like Oasis and Blur and all these other things, and like Blur 30. They're very experimental records for being like quote unquote Brit pop bands. I mean, there's a lot of like playing with synth modules and using guitars as tools and not playing them linearly, like scale wise and all that. And just the way they create music, it's like, you know, it's like painting, it's like colors, it's like, In a way, it's kind of like, in my mind, where the Beatles and Pink Floyd and those guys left off, you know what I mean? Kind of, you know, that Abbey Road kind of weirdness, you know?
Looking forward to it. I hope to hear that, man. It sounds very, very cool. So one more question for you before I let you go. Your thoughts on Gilbert Godfrey coming out as a member of Slipknot, in particular Tortilla Man?
I'm pissed at him because he's supposed to not tell anybody.
Fair enough, man. Well, hey, Jim, I really appreciate it, man, taking some time to speak with us here at MMR. Continued success with the new album, We Are
Thank
Not
you.
Your Kind, number one fucking album, man.
I
Be
know.
Proud of that shit.
Awesome.
And, of course, the tour, the Knotfest Roadshow in town today here in Camden, New Jersey.
Yes.
And best of the luck with the rest of the tour, man.
Awesome.
Mr.
Thank
Jim
you.
Root. Thank you, sir.
Thanks,
appreciate
dude.
It.
Hey, y'all, this is Jim Root from Slipknot.
Go with it.
It's not a country station. Can't do it. Hey, everyone, this is Jim Root from Slipknot, and you're listening to Brent Porsche on 93.3 WMMR, Philadelphia.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.